97.7 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. All right, text line is open at 343-0106. And as I mentioned before we went into the news break, we are joined by Alabama Senator Doug Jones. Checking in from, are you in Washington this morning?
No, I'm actually home in Birmingham today, headed to Selma. We're doing an environmental program later today, but we're out for the week, so it's good to be home.
All right, so you're home in Alabama, and I want to talk about a couple issues. I mean, these both reside in Alabama. First of all, one that is a national issue. You've talked about it before with us, the widow's tax. Can you back up for a second and tell people what the widow's tax is if they haven't heard about this?
Sure, John. This is a really unfair treatment of surviving spouses of veterans who've died from a service-related injury or death. There's two potential pots of money out there for them. One is a statutory that everyone gets that's administered through the VA. The second is like their own insurance that they purchase with their own money administered through the Department of Defense. But because of a law that was passed some 35 or 40 years ago, literally that long, what the Department of Defense and the VA do is they offset each other, and so that these surviving spouses don't get their full benefit of what they paid for. There's been an effort over the last 20 years to try to eliminate that. It has been successfully defeated each time for some reason. I don't know. It came to my attention thanks to a Mobile widow, Kathy Milford, and we have been working hard on this, and we've got it real close to the finish line, I think. We should hear any day now about our National Defense Authorization Act. It has been in a conference between trying to reconcile the differences between the House and the Senate, and I am we're real close, I believe, to having that in the NDAA. We don't know for sure, but I'm very hopeful. I've got 76 total co-sponsors on this legislation. It is probably the most bipartisan bill we've seen in the Senate yet.
And now, the way this works, is it the private insurance that pulls back the amount, or what comes through the federal government that's pulled back?
Well, it's all administered through the federal government. So it's one through the Department of Defense and the VA, and they offset. I believe it's the offset of the VA benefit from the private. It could be the other way. Regardless, they get about 55% or thereabouts of the total two parts of the money that they paid for, and the part that they would get normally as part of a VA benefit in the normal course. So they're just not getting their money. I mean, they're essentially losing the money that they pay for, regardless of which is offset. They're losing the money, their hard-earned money that's gone into their estate plan.
I mean, so in a way, I mean, they're punished for planning, right? I mean, that's
And the Department of Defense uses this money for whatever resource. I haven't quite been able to figure out what they do, but it's kept with the Department of Defense. And they're essentially punished. You got it right. That's why it's called a tax, even though it's not technically a tax. We call it, it's been dubbed the widow's tax because they're essentially paying the government their hard-earned money. It's just unbelievable that this has been allowed to continue. And it's come up for several votes, Sean, over the last 18 or 20 years. And each time, it hasn't been able to be put in. I'm very hopeful. Senator Inhofe from Oklahoma, who is the chairman of the Armed Services Committee, has signaled that he believes it will get in this time, that there is just overwhelming support for it. We've had not only 70-something co-sponsors, but we had a resolution on the floor of the Senate about a month ago. It was what they call a motion to instruct, which was instructing our members of our conference committee to make sure that widow's tax is in there. And it passed the Senate 94-0. So there's just amazing support for it. With just the staff and all, we've just worked real hard gathering up all the support we can, both in the House and the Senate.
Yeah, and Senator Jones, that was my next question. So you get this through the Senate. Does that then go? Is there a similar bill in the House, or how does that work?
Yeah. No. Here's the way the posture it's in right now, because it's a really good question. Because of some budgetary rules in the Senate, we could not get this in our National Defense Authorization that passed the Senate back earlier in the summer. The House version of the National Defense Authorization included that. I had gone over and met with House leadership several times, and they were able, this has been a priority over there, and because I think the bill over in the Senate, over in the House, had some 300 co-sponsors. So they were able, the House of Representatives passed the National Defense Authorization. It included a widow's tax elimination provision. So now, once that happens, when you got separate bills passing both houses of Congress, it goes to a conference committee composed of both House and Senate members, and they iron out the differences between the two bills, and then they will come up with one bill that will then be voted on by both the House and the Senate. You can't have any amendments, and that's where we believe that that the widow's tax elimination will be included in that conference bill that we will then vote on once again. It'll be the exact bill in the House and the Senate.
See, that's the sausage getting made, y'all, but that's what I'm interested in.
That's exactly right.
How that works. I also want to talk about this DESCEND Act. You worked on this with Bill Cassidy out of Louisiana, right? Senator Cassidy.
Yeah. Senator Cassidy and I have a couple things we're working on. He's a doctor, so we've got some health-related bills as well. As his fishing industry is as important to Louisiana as it is down there in South Alabama to our state.
So let's talk about, I read through some of the news accounts here, but I want to drill in a little further. I mean, this is talking about what we call vent tools on my boat. Is that what you're talking about, a way to vent the swim bladder on the air bladder on a snapper?
Yeah, that's exactly right. This is something that I haven't really understood, but apparently we lose hundreds of thousands of snapper every year because when they're brought up, but yet they can't be kept. Either they're too small or for whatever reason, it's out of season, they've hit their limit. When they put those fish back in, because of they've been brought up so quickly, their lungs can't take it and they literally die. And we lose hundreds of thousands of fish every year. This is going to, and we talked to a lot of fishermen before we jumped onto this bill to make sure everybody was comfortable with it. This will put those venting tools and other pieces of equipment on the boat so that they can use this to save. I think a lot of our fishermen are using these already.
Yep.
We need to make sure people have this at their disposal so we can help these fish populations continue to grow.
It's the air bladder. They can't get it reset when you bring them up, and then they swim circles, and then the porpoises come in and eat them.
That's exactly right. You know more about all of this than I do, Sean. You're right there on the coast with your show. But yes, it's not a lung; it's an air bladder.
Right. So okay. One of the things I wonder about this, though, is you say, the law, or at least one of the news accounts said this law could protect population of red snapper in the Gulf of Mexico. One of the frustrations we have here is anything that'll protect the numbers going forward is great, but the way those numbers have been calculated over time, so many of us, I would say beyond a plurality of, let's say, recreational anglers I'll speak for along the Gulf, say the populations are being underestimated by National Marine Fisheries. So we're really frustrated with an agency out of Washington assessing the numbers of red snapper tonnage in the Gulf that then is mandated, you can only catch X number of tonnage, and the state of Alabama has done a pretty good job dealing with that. But we feel like the data at the top here through National Marine Fisheries is faulty. So what do we do? How do you and the Senate fix that?
Well, I think one of the things that this is going to do is going to help with a study to make sure that we've got that. This mandates a study also about the very issue that we're talking about. And I think when the combination of things that we've got with this study, I think we're going to have a more accurate representation. I don't know whether I've heard the same complaints from fishermen along the Gulf Coast, and I think if that's the case, and you guys are down there on, you've got the boots on the ground, so to speak, down there, and understand this. If that's the case, then we've got to recalibrate. I think the study that's mandated here will help in that. This has got a 5-year sunset provision because it also includes a study to make sure, and I think once we can get that study completed, it's going to help kind of balance out any discrepancies between what you're talking about and where the populations are, because the whole goal is to increase those populations so that we can have better fishing, more fishing, and not destroy what's going to be the long term impact for snapper fishing in the Gulf.
Agreed. And I'm a conservationist, and we'll look at it from the recreational side. I would argue that the conservationist wants to protect the stock more than anyone. And, you know, I could come to Washington and make this argument sure. for you if you want me to. But that goes back into the state control of it. Even though it is a fishery that's in the Gulf, it is specifically tied to the different Gulf states. And with the state... With what it means in tax revenue to the state, what it means in quality of life for us down here along the coast, the last thing we would do with an open eye is do something that long-term or even short-term would decrease the stock, right? I mean, we have scientists here in Alabama. This is not just me talking. It's the scientists with Alabama Marine Fisheries and elsewhere that are analyzing this in Washington. And that would be the last thing they would want to do is overtax that stock and collapse the fishery.
Correct. I mean, I can't argue with that. However, not everybody is as conscientious. We're trying to figure out a way to make sure that folks that are out there that are fishing the Gulf and fishing those snapper and fishing other reef fish, play by the rules to make sure that everybody's playing the same way. And I understand we've got a whole different thing on management that everybody's looking at. I think the Modern Fish Act that we passed last year is going to help in that as well. There's always that tug of war, Sean. You know this better than anybody, probably. There's always the tug of war between the commercial, the charter, and the recreational. We've tried to talk to everybody to get their take on all this, and everyone seems to be pretty good with this particular act.
All right. I want to pivot here, Senator Jones, and talk about some news back here in Alabama, but one that your name comes in up in a bunch, and I've been trying to get my head around everything going on with the Democrat Party here. And did we lose the senator? Maybe we have the senator here. Do we have the senator back on?
I'm sorry, Sean. Some new headphones, and I hit the wrong button and
okay.
popped you off.
Well, got you back on, Senator. So I wanted to pivot now and talk a little bit about Democrat politics here in Alabama, in the state. And you and I have talked about this kind of a little, here and there over the last year or so, but it's come to a real head. Nancy Worley was on Capital Journal on Friday calling out your name and others, talking about this split within the Democrat Party. From your perspective, who now is in charge of the Alabama Democrat Party? Who is that?
Chris England, Representative Chris England from Tuscaloosa. You know, Sean, here's the thing. You know, the Democratic National Committee kind of oversees all of this. I mean, it's from the national group that any state party exists. And there has to be a combination, and you have to do things consistent. Ms. Worley's election was overturned by the Democratic National Committee back in February. And the committee said, you've got to do some new bylaws. You've got to have more, you've got to reach out. You've got to do more things to represent, have a representation of Democrats on your state Democratic Executive Committee. And the old, Ms. Worley and others refused to do that. They just gave it only lip service. And ultimately, a group that followed the bylaws that existed at the time called a meeting. Pursuant to a majority of the state Democratic Executive Committees that was done, they passed new bylaws. Those bylaws have been approved and recognized by the Democratic National Committee. Pursuant to that, they called a separate meeting. They elected Chris England as chair. It was a contested election. There were several hundred people that showed up for that committee, including a quorum that was needed to be met. We added folks. They elected new members of the State Democratic Executive Committee, and they elected a new chair and a vice chair. And as of right now, that is who the Democratic National Committee recognized. Everything was done right by the book. The Secretary of State has implicitly acknowledged them. There was a photograph on Twitter. We've got Chris and his folks are in the office. They're making sure all of these qualification forms were done. You know, the really interesting thing I saw in that Capital Journal was when she talked about, threatening people with her gun.
Yeah, yeah.
She was complaining that there were people, she was concerned that there were folks interfering with the staff. Well, Sean, there was a staff of one that was there. Ms. Worley was barely in the office the entire week before qualifying. And we had historic numbers of presidential candidates who qualified for to run for president in the Democratic primary in Alabama. And we've got a number of people that were qualifying. And Chris England and folks from my campaign went down there to help volunteer because Ms. Worley didn't show up to the office all week. And there was only one staff member who was just overrun. And it had it not been for Chris's new staff, his transition team, as well as some of the volunteers that we were able to get, we would have been in really, really bad shape, as the Democratic Party has been over the last 10 or 12 years. So I don't think that there is a lawsuit that is currently pending. I am very confident that that lawsuit is going to end up with a recognition of who the chair party is in that state, Representative England.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to hear how that plays out, because I think in that interview, too, Ms. Worley was saying, well, that's the federal Alabama Democrat group, and I may not have the words right, I'm paraphrasing here, but we're the Alabama Democrat.
Which is just silly.
Which is third world kind of stuff. Just, that is third world.
No,
like
it's just a silly comment, because there were more people that showed up at the meeting on November 2nd that voted for Chris England, many more people, I mean hundreds more people that showed up for that meeting than the meeting. They didn't even get a quorum at the meeting under their bylaws. They didn't even get a quorum at the meeting on November the 16th. So it's just disingenuous to say those kind of things. And it's just time for the change. I don't understand why people can't make a smooth transition when they get voted out of office. This is just something that's not what we do in Alabama or America. We make those transitions and we move on. But Ms. Worley doesn't seem to be able to have the ability to do that. And that's unfortunate. And they have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars of good Democrats' money in legal fees trying to protect her position on the committee. And that's unfortunate as well.
Yeah, I wonder if there's going to be a time down the road here that they'll Representative England and everything will be moving along with the Alabama Democrat Party, but there will be this junta, this group out here that's going to be forever claiming, well, you know, I still consider myself the head of the Alabama Democrat Party. You know, I mean, like something well, you tell folks, you know, at Thanksgiving dinner, well, little did you know, I'm still the leader.
You know, look, I can't control that, but I think if people are just going to brush that off. I mean, there's no one that is going to effectively believe that Ms. Worley is still the head of the Democratic Party when she can't even get into the office.
That's a good point. And who shows up at the convention this year?
I think that, first of all, you've got a delegate selection plan that is going to be submitted. That's the other thing. Alabama right now, because of their complete negligence, is the only state without a delegate selection plan. Now, that didn't have to be done before the qualification date came and went. But I think that selection plan will be resubmitted. It'll be tweaked the way that the Democratic National Committee requires. We'll have that delegate selection plan. We've got a ton of people running for delegate on behalf of any number of presidential candidates. They will get elected. It will be that's the delegation. Remember that it's not the State Democratic Executive Committee. But it is those people that are elected, and then those people that are elected as delegates, according to the formula of who got the votes, will elect additional delegates to represent the whoever qualifies to get delegates among the presidential candidates. They will select a chairman of the delegation, and that's who will go. And so I think that is all in the works, and Alabama will ultimately be represented. It has just not been completed and finalized just yet. I think that's in the works, and that'll be completed soon.
Senator Jones, thank you for your time this morning. Thanks for joining us.
As always, Sean, look, let me say real quick, if we can, I'd like for everybody to just take a moment out at Thanksgiving. Number one, not only to give thanks for all that they have, but to remember the family of Sheriff John Williams up in Lowndes County.
Absolutely.
Who was tragically killed Saturday evening. We need to be giving a lot of thanks and prayers and uplifting that entire community and his family. That's a big loss for the state of Alabama. He was wonderful, wonderful man. So,
well said.
Please remember that, and I hope you, Sean, and everyone, all of your listeners, have a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday and try to get through Iron Bowl week.
That's right. I won't even. Do you want to make a prediction there, or is that?
I never make predictions.
All right, Senator Jones. Thanks for your time.
All right, thanks, John. Bye bye.
All right, Senator Doug Jones joining us right here on FM Talk 106.5. We'll be right back.
AM 837 FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings. Let's head to McConnell Automotive and talk to Mitch McConnell. Hey, Mitch.
All right, Dalton. Good morning, buddy.
Hey, same to you. Now, we got Thanksgiving coming up on Thursday, but the Black Friday deals have already started at McConnell Automotive. Tell us about these great deals.
Yeah, Dalton, it's exciting, man. Anybody out there listening, I just invite you to go to our website. It's a really easy place, Dalton, everybody to shop, and, you know, McConnellAutomotive.com. But Black Friday, Dalton, the biggest discount I've ever seen off a new car is 20%. And some of the ones on our website are 25% off. So, you know, what I'm excited about, Dalton, is if somebody's looking for the new Sierra, the new Yukon, Acadia, all the vehicles we have in Buick and GMC, you know, everything's at least 16% off. And just want people to picture in their mind, we have 0% interest for 72 months. And, man, don't have to wait for this Friday because it's already here on Monday, Dalton. People just need to get out there and start shopping, buddy.
Man, that is some good stuff. McConnellAutomotive.com, a great website to check out the new and pre-owned inventory. Have a good one, Mitch.
Y'all take care, Dalton.
All right, that's Mitch McConnell. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dauphin Street just east of I-65.
Right, 8:38 FM Talk 106.5. And any reaction there on commentary from Senator Doug Jones? I think it's like this snapper thing. This is, and yes, I understand that this is a pet project of mine, but to get into, you know, hey, we're going to have a federal law to have venting tools, which are a thing you use to let the air out of the swim bladder, let the snapper go back down. We've been doing that for years. To have a big, you know, goings on in Washington over this when the real question is, and that's a valid thing. You should be using the venting tools. That is true. It's valid and good. But it goes back to the question of state management, of getting this out of the hands of the National Marine Fisheries. And I wonder if that's just, he's not hearing that. I wonder if he's not hearing that. And the other part of the discussion, that one on Nancy Worley and her faction of the Alabama Democrat Party, it is just like, she's basically like somebody who has gotten fired who won't leave their desk. It's like, I'm showing up every day. I'm going to be here. And you know, everybody else is like, yeah, you're really not here anymore. You're not part of the company. Uh-huh, I'm here. I'm reporting for duty. Yeah, your job's gone. I'm here and reporting for duty. So, oh well, keep your eyes on that as well. And then I'm probably seeing this. Kane didn't have any extra traffic going westbound today on I-10, did he? Because I didn't hear any reports. I figured it would be a mass exodus of people leaving Alabama, going to Mississippi to get lottery tickets.
Yeah, because today's the day, right?
Yep, so you just go right across the line. I mean, I don't know where would be the first place you would get going, I-10, I mean, Goche or somewhere in there. But yeah, Mississippi is selling lottery tickets. They got their, here's what our news partners, WKRG, said. The first sales of scratch-off tickets started at 5 this morning. Also starting today, Alabama will be surrounded on all sides by states that sell lottery tickets and remains one of the last states in the nation without a lottery. According to the Associated Press, nearly 1,200 convenience stores and other sites have been approved as retailers for the first 2 months. The only scratch-off tickets will be sold for single-state games. The multi-state games, Powerball and Mega Millions, will be available in Mississippi starting January 30th. Mm. So you're just scratching right now, I guess. Mississippi has been one of six states without a lottery, but lawmakers met in 2018, authorized the games of chance. The first $80 million a year will go to their highways, and revenue after that will go to education. You don't get me started on the Mississippi highways thing. I mean, it's sure it can be anecdotal, but for folks coming from Mobile County, if you go out 98 or you go out 45 and you hit the Mississippi state line, all of a sudden the angels start singing. It goes to it goes to divided four lane with the big median. I run 45 a bunch. And where you cross in from Alabama and you hit Mississippi there by state line, you go there and, I mean, 45 goes to four lanes, big median, nice, you know, shoulders on the big, nice open road. I mean, big, safe, you know, nice road. Then you hit Alabama again. It goes,
yeah, back to becomes a death trap once you get into Alabama.
Well, it's been literally that for a lot of folks. So, yeah, Mississippi's spending the first $80 million from their lotto each year goes to the roads. Now, I don't know what happened in the legislature, because a lot of times what people will do is they'll bring in money from lottery and then move the money. It didn't. It says the first $80 million a year will go to highways. That doesn't tell me whether that goes in on top of whatever the allocation is for their infrastructure, or if they moved $80 million out to somewhere else and put this in to patch it. I don't know.
Well, Alabama really is boxed in now. Mm-hmm. I mean, because I guess to increase your odds, you could drive from Mississippi to Florida, back to Mississippi to Florida, and just keep playing all the different games, especially in January once Powerball is available there.
Mind you, your odds are bad. You know, that. You know, gambling in any form is a stupid tax.
Yeah,
okay?
Well, that...
Okay, stupid tax, just let you know, stupid tax. It's not... It's recreation for folks. I want people to have the liberty to do it. I don't encourage it. It's not a solid plan, not a solid retirement plan.
Well, you could call it a recreational tax, too. If you know that you're willing to waste a little bit of money.
And it's fun, that's good. If you're using it as some method of financing life or retirement, it's not good.
Yeah, if everything you've got is riding on the news and pulling those lotto balls out and letting you know who won. But really now, Mississippi has a lottery. Florida has it. Mm-hmm. Tennessee definitely has it. Georgia, they have it too. Mm-hmm. So Alabama now the only state, and we are boxed in not having the lottery.
Well, we knew this was coming, and this is going to be part of another bite at the apple for lottery in the legislature this year when session gets started up on Goat Hill. You know, they didn't pass the lotto bill last time. And what it boiled down to, a couple things, but it boiled down to they couldn't figure out who would get what money. Would money stay in the general fund? Would money go into the ETF? And the other problem in this mix is, since the interview I had last week with Robert McGee from the Porch Bandit Creek Indians, that, you know, if the tribe doesn't want it to happen, the tribe doesn't let it happen in our legislature. And the tribe does not want electronic lottery to go into these dog track facilities, right? So that was one of the parts of the bill. There was a... what they called the clean lotto bill, and then there was the other one that allowed lottery at these off-site gaming facilities. And that's what the Porch Bandit Creek Indians opposes. They said, and Robert McGee said it the other day on the show, if it is a clean lottery bill, in other words, it's paper lottery, you go get the scratch-offs or you fill in the little card and the pick five or six or whatever numbers it is. I'm not good at this. obviously not a big gambler. If you have that, They're behind it. They're going to get out of the way. If it then goes to a electronic form at these facilities, because you know what they would argue, same way bingo is legal, they'd say, well, lotto is legal. We're just doing electronic lotto. Mm-hmm. Then the Porch Bandit Creek Indians are against that. They have a lot of influence in the legislature, and they can get, if not killed, they can get it slowed down or derailed pretty easily. So it'll be interesting. Will there be a cry? Will the cry be as strong this year in session to pass the lottery now that Alabama, like Dalton said, is completely boxed in? Or people say, forget about it, the train has passed, and might as well be the different one in the room and not have the lottery. Just that'll set us apart.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I do want to know how many Alabamians today, you know, just to bring in the new lottery there in Mississippi, how many people are traveling over to Mississippi today just to play some scratch-offs to say, day one, I was there to go ahead and play. I don't know if there's that many now that, like you said, Florida's had it, Georgia's had it, Tennessee's had it. Maybe some of the people that are on the west side of Alabama see that new game that they can play over in Mississippi, but I do imagine over time there's going to be a lot of Alabama dollars spent over there across the state line.
See, now Tim is getting my attention here. He said the Oaks on Highway 90, halfway between state line and Pascagoula. Then there's multiple state lines. There's a state line down here. I was talking about the state line that's Greene County, or is that Wayne County? Right there. He said the Oaks on Highway 90, halfway between state line and Pascagoula, they have the best hot dogs in the world.
Hmm.
Better than Dewdrop, Tim? Come on now. If it is, then he said, damn the scratch-offs, it's worth the drive for a hot dog. Now you're talking about something that would motivate me to take a ride. If it's a hot dog that is that good, maybe we'll make a road trip.
Yeah, the hot dog, that's not a stupid tax, right?
No, that's a good tax. Getting those nitrates in your body.
Mm.
I mean, you know, I mean, it's...
Do they have them on the rollers, or they actually serve them to you?
Ask Tim on the text line. He'll let us know. Coming right back, we'll grab your calls and text at 343-0106. talking about downloading the My TSA app. Oh, but we're traveling.
Don't do it.
Traveling on Friday, so I'm smart enough to leave. All the traffic issues are leading into Thanksgiving, so I'm going the day after Thanksgiving.
Well, you'll have people leaving Mobile that were down here for Thanksgiving.
Maybe they're probably going to stay. I'm leaving early. Do you think they're going to leave early on a Friday?
No. But, I mean, you got the tryptophan that'll probably keep them asleep.
That's right.
Through most of Friday.
See, and we're, you know, we're going to check through TSA. I had to look there because of firearms. So we're traveling with firearms.
Ooh.
So which is not a big deal. But there's, although it depends on what airport you're at. I mean, there's, I've never had an issue here, but you get in other airports where they don't know the rules and stuff, and mm-hmm. there's a system, there's a way you're supposed to do it, and that's lost on some people at some airports. But Mobile's never been an issue.
No, probably most of the Southeast, it's not much of an issue until you get into like South Florida, I would imagine.
Right. So I've traveled with firearms, but I cannot travel with gravy or mashed potatoes because this TSA app we're talking about. There's a section called "Can I Bring?" And you can bring on the airplane. You can bring a whole turkey, like cooked or frozen. You could as a carry-on item, which just. I want to see that. I will crack up if I see somebody traveling with a turkey. You can bring that on as a carry-on, but you can't bring gravy, mashed potatoes, anything liquid, they said. And they said mashed potatoes are liquid. They said cranberries are liquid. If you got them in that can, you know, when it comes out as that congealed mass, that's like a solid to me.
Well, you know, if you take a frozen turkey on the plane, and you do have to start thawing these turkeys out earlier than ever.
Oh, yeah, it'll be thawing as you travel.
But that means there will be liquid dripping off of the turkey. Where does that fall on this little TSA app? And if you are planning on downloading,
it's true.
Are you going to download this app? I hope you know if you download this app, the government will be tracking every move you make.
I know, but I'll have so much fun with it. It may be worth it. Also, text coming in. And by the way, a big discussion of hot dogs. We'll have to do a hot dog show going forward. A lot of folks are saying this hot dog of Mississippi is better than Dewdrop. I'm having trouble with that it's better. I'm now interested. It's piqued my curiosity that you have a hot dog better than a Dewdrop. We'll have to check that out. I'll check it out. Now, not many people here, not many people are going to play the lottery that I see here. And by the way, too, we said it's just scratch-offs right now. It's not the paper or the Powerball or all that stuff till January 30th. So for some reason, I love how these laws work. We'll pass it. They can start doing scratch-off on this day, but they can't do the paper till, you know, January 30th. Mm-hmm. If you can do it, just do it. David says on the text line, instead of passing a gas tax, Mississippi passed the lottery. Interesting. You know, Alabama with the gas tax already. Now, I think Mississippi's gas tax was higher than Alabama's before we increased. I got to compare it now. But will Alabama pass the lottery? As a funding device for government, in every discussion we've had over the years about the lottery, the people that worry about the allocation of funds for a lottery and how it's used and mechanisms to it and all that account for about 10%. 90% of the people I've talked to over the years, over the decade, which, you know, FM Talk 106.5 for 10, made it a decade, have been just like, I want to play the lottery, and I don't want that money going out of state.
Mm-hmm.
That's been the bulk of the art. It's only the legislature and others that have gotten into the, well, if this much goes into ETF and this much stays in the general fund, and here's, you know, my big worry is what it will cost to administer the lottery, how much government growth was there. I mean, my push for the longest time was legalize lotteries in the state of Alabama, make private companies bond, if they wanted to do it, they would have to show a bond that they could pay off whatever the big, you know, payoff could be.
Mm-hmm.
They would pay a fee to the state of Alabama to be a licensed lottery. It would be a, you know, a business fee for them to run lottery in the state of Alabama, and then let private businesses do it and get the state out of it. But
and then the state,
that's never going to happen.
And then the state would know what they're getting every single year.
Correct.
Depending on who all.
Well, they
could
guarantee, and this, they could guarantee a certain amount for the fee to run a lottery, and then a percentage of what the net was of the lottery company. Now, they couldn't budget on it year after year because those numbers could move, but the state would also never lose money on it. It would never have a cost incurred. There would be no bottom line to make up before you started getting into the black.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to happen. So but by the way, speaking of money coming in too, this all goes into the other discussion about what this latest compact offering is from the Porch Creeks. that want to offer up. It tells you how much it must be worth to do this. Millions, if not over time, $1 billion worth of money to the state of Alabama for them to have the exclusive gaming rights and open two new facilities. And I mean, the people here obviously want to gamble.
Yeah. And I wonder where this leaves us with other forms of gambling, you know, with this Porch Creek offer. If they're going to start...
You want a sports book, don't you?
You knew where I was angling. Yeah, if they are going to start offering Class 3 gaming, and I believe they would... I mean, actually, I don't know for 100% sure, but I would imagine that they definitely want sports books in their casinos, the Porch Creek casinos.
Yeah, imagine.
But, you know, Tennessee, they legalized online-only sports gambling, so they don't have any, like, brick-and-mortar casinos where they're offering the sports gambling. When will Alabama, if we're going to jump in, and if we are going to legalize the lottery coming up in special session, how far behind will we be with the sports books? Will Alabama jump in
First of all, if we cannot get... What is the wine spritzer of the gambling world, which is lottery, right? It's a little, just a little taste of alcohol. It's like a mimosa. This little taste of it. If they can't, if the House and the Senate in Montgomery could not come to terms on getting something like that passed, it is good. You think they're going to get sports books legalized in the state of Alabama?
It's a good chance.
You're on crack rock.
It's a good chance to actually jump ahead of Mississippi.
It's not going to happen.
No, I don't think it'll happen either. But they could jump ahead of Mississippi because right now in Mississippi, if you want to gamble on sports, you got to go into one of the casinos. You can't do it outside of the casino. If Alabama actually legalized, you know, online gaming where you had to use an Alabama app, kind of like the TSA app you're talking about, then I think more people would stay in Alabama instead of traveling to Biloxi to play in the sports.
I don't disagree with the facts other than the fact that you're expecting this to go through the Alabama legislature. Now, all the other things you said are accurate and right on. You fail to see what happens in Goat Hill.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing happens.
Yeah, they pass some gas taxes. 858 FM Talk 106.5. We'll be back at noon for Midday Mobile. Mike Gallagher is next.